This is Fresh Air. If one member of NATO was attacked, the other members would respond as if they were attacked. The 16 members of NATO are not ready to extend that commitment to the new democracies of Central Europe, although Poland, the Czech Republic, and Hungary had sought a timetable for membership. President Clinton attended a NATO summit earlier this week in Brussels. Then he flew to Prague, where he discussed his Partnership for Peace program with leaders of Central European democracies. This program is an alternative to full membership in NATO, which would offer a degree of military cooperation from NATO and the possibility of membership at a future point. My guest, Timothy Garton-Ash, is an expert on Central Europe. His latest book is In Europe's Name, Germany and the Divided Continent. Earlier today, we called him at his home in Oxford. President Clinton is afraid that granting former Soviet bloc countries full membership in NATO would alienate Russia. I asked Timothy Garton-Ash what he thought of that concern.
I think we are worrying too much about the impact of our policy on the balance of power between so-called moderates and hardliners or hawks and doves in Moscow. That balance will be decided above all by what happens inside Russia. Zhirinovsky got his 25% even with the most conciliatory approach from the West. If Russia becomes a democracy, it has nothing to fear from an extension of NATO. If Russia becomes an expansionist dictatorship again, then we need to get the democracies of East Central Europe into NATO as fast as possible.
Well, do you think that the United States and Western Europe would want to lend full military support to Eastern European countries if there was another threat from the Soviet Union?
Eastern Europe no longer exists. We're talking in the first instance about East Central Europe, Poland, the Czech Republic, Hungary, which are well on the way to being stable democracies. And the answer, certainly in the case of Germany, is quite possibly yes, not least because Germany does not want itself to be the front line of the West. It's had that experience for the last 40 years, and it's not a comfortable place to be. In fact, you'll recall it was the German Defense Minister, Volker Rohr, who pleaded for enlargement of NATO to include Germany's immediate eastern neighbors. And in my view, if the United States had come down on that side of the argument, rather than being obsessed almost with not upsetting Moscow, then you could have had a different outcome, and in my view, a better outcome to the Brussels summit.
What are the differences between full membership in NATO and what is being offered the former Soviet bloc countries under this new proposal?
Well, you know, there was an old joke in Eastern Europe, what's the difference between a democracy and a people's democracy? Answer, the difference between a jacket and a straitjacket. And there is all the difference in the world. The Partnership for Peace is a very vague and insubstantial package, which, in the case of a real threat to these countries' security, offers nothing more than consultation with NATO. So it is in itself offers very little, but there is, I'm glad to say, a window of opportunity still open for the post-communist countries that actually are becoming stable democracies to move towards membership, and I hope that NATO will move more in that direction.
Is it spelled out in the Partnership for Peace what one of the new democracies would have to do to finally become a full member of NATO?
Not at all. Not at all. Very little is spelled out in those partnerships. Everything is still to play for. And I think the answer in practice is threefold. Firstly, Poland, above all, Hungary or Czech Republic, has to go on making progress towards being a stable democracy and towards a restructuring of their armed forces to make them capable of full NATO membership. Secondly, the United States has to some extent to change its mind. And thirdly, the issue of the Russian attitude probably has to be clarified one way or another. Either a Russia that is more threatening or a Russia that is more clearly democratic and cooperative would make NATO membership for East Central Europe easier.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Timothy Garton Ash. His new book is called In Europe's Name, Germany and the Divided Continent. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Timothy Garton Ash, author of the new book In Europe's Name, Germany and the Divided Continent. Let's talk a little bit about how the new democracies of East Central Europe are changing the face of Europe. Some say that the former division of Europe actually helped bring peace and stability in Europe. Do you think that some of the countries of Europe actually benefited by that former split?
You know, the British Foreign Secretary said to me in December 1989, just after the Berlin Wall had come down, that the system of divided Europe was one under which we lived quite happily for 40 years. And that is, to some extent, true, particularly for Britain and France, but even for many people in West Germany. A lot of people live quite happily with their backs to the Berlin Wall. The Berlin Wall also, in a sense, protected us from all the problems and uncertainties of Eastern Europe that now confront us. And the other point, of course, is that, relatively speaking, the balance of power between the big three of the European community, Germany, France, and Britain, has changed to Germany's advantage and relatively to France and Britain's disadvantage.
Well, what did France and Britain gain in terms of their power, economic or political, while Europe was divided?
Well, firstly, they gained in terms of a certain forced stability in Europe. The division of Europe and the Soviet threat made a lot of things much simpler. But secondly, the international order in Europe was to some extent frozen in its post-Second World War condition, with Britain and France clearly at the top table as still formally occupying powers in Germany and Berlin, with their seats, a permanent membership of the United Nations Security Council, and so on. And, of course, all that has either gone or been put in question by the end of the Cold War and the end of the division of Germany.
What are some of the other ways in which you think Europe is at a turning point now?
To take the 20th century as our unit, at the beginning of the 20th century, Europe was predominant in the world, a Europe of empires and of nation states. And then, of course, Europe tore itself apart, descending into war and then into the barbarism of two totalitarian dictatorships, communist and fascist. And you can read the story of the last 40 years culminating in the events of 1989 as Europe gradually scrabbling, working its way back up out of the abyss. And the question, perhaps in the last 5 years of the 20th century, is whether we are finally putting Europe back together again into some sort of civilized condition, or whether what in fact we're witnessing is a return to the conflicts and indeed the wars which have characterized much of European history. In other words, what is the normality to which Europe is returning?
Well, what is Europe now? What is the eastern end of Europe now?
The trouble with Europe is that it's the most ill-defined of continents. It doesn't end clearly in the east. It just fades away. And the question where Europe ends in the East is a perennial one, in particular to what extent Russia belongs to Europe. But what one can say is this, that there is a large area which clearly belongs to Europe culturally and historically, which has experienced Western Christianity, the Renaissance, the Reformation, the Enlightenment, all the formative experiences of Western European history, which is not part of the political thing we call Europe, that is the European Community, or now the European Union. And so there, we still have a long way to go before the real historical Europe fits with, coincides with, the political unit Europe that we all talk about, and the political partner of the United States.
The NATO countries are talking again about the possibility of using military force against the Serbs. What do you think are the reasons for and against military intervention?
Well, the obvious argument against is that this is a quagmire, a morass, another Vietnam, and that once you get in, you'll never get out with good effect and with honor. I do think that a military intervention now is a much, much more difficult proposition than it would have been back in 1991, when it was essentially a matter of stopping Serbian aggression against another republic of the former Yugoslavia. So I think the arguments are much more finely balanced. Nonetheless, I believe that more must be done to prevent, in particular, the final strangulation of Sarajevo.
So when you look at the pros and the cons, you think something should be done, but not necessarily military intervention?
I think that a carefully calculated military support for keeping Sarajevo alive, at the very least, and keeping the other enclaves in Bosnia alive, is the minimum that should be done. And that would certainly should help to concentrate minds on the political settlement in Bosnia, which is clearly the next step. I also think that a preemptive presence, a larger preemptive presence in Macedonia would be highly advisable, because one can see all too clearly that Macedonia might be the next Bosnia.
Do you think that the situation in the Balkans now is, in a way, a test of how the NATO countries are going to respond militarily in the post-Cold War world?
It's clearly that. By the way, in the first instance, it was a test of how Europe was going to, and I mean the political Western Europe, was going to behave in the post-Cold War world, because, of course, this was the first great test of the so-called common foreign and security policy envisaged in the Maastricht Treaty. And many people in Europe said, leave it to us, this is Europe's problem, a message that was gladly heard, of course, in the United States. And what a mess we made of it. So in the first place, it was a test for Europe, a test which Europe has so far failed. I think it has now become a test for NATO.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Timothy Garton Ash is the author of In Europe's Name, Germany and the Divided Continent. This is Fresh Air.